From the lakefront to the riverfront, this is where Wisconsin sports fans come to talk. The Bill Michaels Show, named Best Radio Show in the Wisconsin Broadcasters Awards for Excellence. Now, here's your host, Bill Michaels.
Welcome, Bill Michaels Show. We are on the air. We are glad you are on board today. Thanks so much. We certainly appreciate you hanging out with us. Radio Joe across the way. And if you want to get a hold of us on Twitter, do so at @Bill_Michaels, @Bill_Michaels, or @RadioJoeSports, @RadioJoeSports. Thanks to you and Tim for filling in yesterday, Joe. That was a long day yesterday. We had we put to rest my mother-in-law, so to speak. And she had passed away a week ago, and you can't say buried because she was cremated, but we had the service last night, which was different because she wanted a party. And I can't believe she held up through it because she was devastated by this, but she held up last night, and she it was the first time we had, like, have you ever gone to a funeral that had music and violins, and it wasn't, like, somber? It was, you know, you had Christmas music in the background, and then at the very end of it, at the very end of the service, we had, when we got married, my buddy Gino down at Calderon Club had given us this bottle of wine, this Moscato, and her mom loved it. Just thought, oh my God, it was unbelievable. So we bought, I bought 10 bottles of this stuff and then 100 glasses. And so last night at the end of the service, we just passed out glasses and passed bottles down the row and then sparkling wine and such for those that didn't drink or kids. And one big toast, everybody had a cocktail. Sat around and BS'd for a little bit, and then we all went out to dinner and had a good time. But so thanks for Tim filling in, and thanks for you for helping out the last few weeks. So it's been good. So yes, that's where I was yesterday. That's what was going on. Anyway, so the Green Bay Packers, with their quarterback Aaron Rodgers, who seems like maybe the cuffs are off, the pressure is off, so to speak, since the firing of Mike McCarthy, we saw a happier, a more energized quarterback, a full four quarters of football out of this offense last week. So Aaron Rodgers was asked, first of all, how, going back to this Bears game, going back to week one on Sunday night, how bad was that injury to his left knee?
Yeah, I'll get into that maybe after the season, but, you know, it's been something that's bothered me for the majority of the season, and, you know, it's been different on Mondays and Tuesdays with the kind of time in here, usually, you know, working out and talking with the coaching staff. It's been a lot more, you know, rehab and preventative stuff.
I'm telling you, we're going to hear about this, about a tear or something or a minor surgery, or you just get that feeling. It's, I know they downplayed it, and I know Aaron Rodgers has taken a lot of grief this year. And when you keep telling people, no, I'm fine, the knee's good, I feel great, it's, you know, I don't need the brace, I'm getting close to 100%. I have a feeling we're going to get this. Well, this is the reason my ability was off a little bit this year. This is the you know, he's still having statistically a good year, but we all know it hasn't been an Aaron Rodgers year. I love when I listen to national talk show hosts that hear, how can people be ripping Aaron Rodgers, and then they just read the stat line. Well, if you watch him every day, Superman hasn't been wearing the cape. We just know there's a level of play that you come to expect. Yes, Aaron Rodgers has deserved some criticism. But for those on the outside looking in to merely look at the stat line, you're erroneous in doing so. Also, Aaron Rodgers was asked, where does his performance with that knee injury over the win over Chicago in the opener rank in his career?
Yeah, it's a special moment in my career. It is the Bears and the injury I was dealing with and the pain. And 20-0 and coming back and winning that game. Seems a long time ago, standing here in week 15. But that was a good moment for us. It's a better moment when you parlay those into, you know, big-time winning seasons and championship runs. But it was a special moment for sure.
It was huge. To see him come back, I mean, I remember the optimism. We were all worried about the knee, that the knee was going to end up costing the season and he was going to be gone for a while. And, And when he came back out, you thought, well, there's no way they're going to win this game. Just come out and get him a little work if he's okay and go from there. And then they won this thing, and you thought, okay, that's the there's your springboard. The specialness of the season. There it is. Here we go. And it just never really materialized the way you had hoped. He was also asked if Green Bay was 6-10, and you know, when they were his first season as a starter, Super Bowl a couple of years later, what gives him confidence that this team can kind of bounce back from where they're at now?
Well, the leadership, really, and I think that's always been the case. I feel strongly about the men leading this organization and the women, and I feel good about our locker room. I think we have some of the right pieces in place moving forward. I think we have a pretty good young nucleus. I think the draft this year was a good one, really good one. You know, I really like what I see in 23. I think he's going to be a star in this league. But more than that, he's got a really good work ethic and a great attitude, loves football. You know, we got some good young players really on this row as well. I think Blake has had a fantastic season. He's come into his own from a leadership standpoint. You're looking over there, you know, the year that Kyler's had, emerging as a good pass rusher, a guy who can set the edge, and that's been exciting. Look over there, you got two great young running backs. You look over there, you got the top receiver in the league and some good young players is there. You look over there, you got some linemen who've been playing at a really high level and some young guys who are going to get a chance to step in and play at some point. And then there's the DBs.
And then there's the DB. There you go. Then there's the DB. Look, all the guys he just reeled off is the reason that you get optimism when this team begins to move forward. Despite the 5-7-1 season record, he thinks the Packers roster is close to actually being, it's closer to being in the Super Bowl than it is to going through a whole rebuild.
Yeah, I just don't think we're that far off. I really do. You know, we have had some injuries to some tough spots. Obviously, Rams went out a bunch, and Geronimo, and guys we expected to play bigger roles for us. Muhammad, you know, who started off and had a good start to the season, he's obviously been out for us. So we've Jake Ryan, who was a, you know, expected starter, has been out. So we've dealt with a lot of stuff, but I like the nucleus of the squad, and I think there's some bright days in our future.
They it certainly seems like they've got I don't know if the word nucleus is proper here or overused, but it certainly seems like they have a good nucleus as to what is inside 1265. They just need to kind of tweak it a little bit. What is he like being what is it like being in a season and really not knowing who your next head coach is going to be?
Yeah, it's different. You know, it's a first. I think if you play long enough, you're around this league long enough, you see and experience a lot of different things for the first time. Obviously, you know, I was here in 05 when Mike got fired, and it's, you know, weird situation when it's midseason. There's so many question marks, but we're just focusing on week 15 and playing for Joe and trying to give him the best opportunity moving forward.
I think they really want to see Joe Philbin stick around. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think that there's a desire for that. I think that he really likes Joe Philbin. He was asked, is he talking to CEO Mark Murphy or Brian Gutekunst about anything regarding the head coach, even since Mike McCarthy got fired?
Well, I think in general they've been a little more visible the entire season. You know, Goody's been more involved, just around more, I think. I can't say what his level of involvement on the day-to-day, you know, game plan, I think, is any of that. But you just see him around, and you see Mark around, whether it's practice or walkthroughs or down the calf or walking through the locker room. You just see him and his staff. They're more visible, I think, which is a good thing for this team.
He also was asked about the reaction to Joe Philbin saying, you know, the three-step drops have helped get the ball out of his hand a lot quicker.
I wouldn't say the concepts were basic, but I thought the flow was really good. And I loved, you know, my favorite maybe sequence of calls in the game was a screen that followed a screen. I mean, the first one could have gone for about 60 had we just blocked it up the right way. And, you know, assignment-wise, Jake was supposed to run a deep over instead of kind of blocking the end and slowing him down. But to come right back with that, I mean, I love that sequence of calls there. But, yeah, Joe did a great job. I mean, the communication was great on the sidelines, and the flow was good, and we kind of got into a rhythm.
Aaron Rodgers also, he was asked about the despite the injuries to the offensive line, they responded. I mean, you got a guy like left tackle David Bakhtiari and Byron Bell and such, and there's been a lot of movement. He was talking about the injuries on the O-line.
Yeah, you know, there's always in certain position groups kind of that one guy you need to stay healthy, and Dave's that guy, you know, because he's an all-pro. He's, you know, I think he has Hall of Fame potential. He's an incredible player. He's been a rock for us. When he's over there, you feel really comfortable with him locking down pass rushers throughout the game. He's played through some injuries. He's had a fantastic season again, and obviously having him out there has been great. You know, it's been tough, you know, with Byron, because Byron's been such a, you know, in the most respectful way, a surprise for us. His leadership has been outstanding. I mean, he's been a great locker room guy. He's been a lot of fun to get to know, and I think he's played well for us. So you hurt for him, and obviously Brian dealing with his injury as well. But we got to, you know, keep believing those guys. I thought Lucas, Jason, and Justin played really well last week, and we need another good effort out of them this week.
Interesting article by Tom Oates we're going to talk about when it comes to Joe Philbin. Many of you asking about whether or not Philbin should be the next head coach. Rodgers was asked about how tough it is for the Packers offensive line to find chemistry when they keep rotating injured players in and out.
The beauty for them is they got two great line coaches. You know, I think I've obviously been buddies with Campy for a long time, and he's been here longer than I have, and he does a great job with them. And Jeff Blasco as well has really done a great job for that room. And the combination of the two of them, I think, is fantastic for young players and old players because they're hitting up with different stuff. Campy, obviously, I think, one of the only guys left on the staff who actually played. And there's that relatability that comes from playing a position. And Jeff, who's, you know, is a grinder, an absolute grinder, finds tendencies and techniques and different things to give those guys. So they've done a phenomenal job. They really have. I think those two guys have been outstanding. And they have helped, you know, the young guys kind of assimilate into their responsibilities, you know, with some of the injuries that we've had.
Also, with, you know, the Bose headphone ads, I don't know if you've noticed that or not. Aaron Rodgers still in the spotlight, whether it's State Farm or Ford Trucks. Now he's got the Bose thing going on, the TV spot, and the Packers. Well, they're 8-0 right now at Soldier Field. How's he feel about all of that?
They agreed to that. They agreed to that. They really did. Chicago had to sign off on that, so that was, I didn't pick Chicago. Not saying I wouldn't have, but I didn't pick that. And like I said, that was filmed at the Chargers stadium right now. But your question about winning there, yeah, we've won 8 in a row. So it's, you know, it's not a, I'm not talking trash to their squad or Akeem or anything. That's just facts. We've had a good run since that Monday night game in 2010, and 7 in a row in the regular season, and obviously 1 in the postseason. It's a great place to play. They got a fantastic fan base. They know when to cheer. They're loud. They're involved in the game. The field has always been kind of a wild card. The length of the grass over the years has been interesting. I've always, you know, complimented Robbie when he was there forever, and our kicker Mason for, you know, the difficulties in kicking in the, you know, the lake effect down there and the weather up here. It's yeah, we've had some great games over the years there, some fun ones, some memorable ones, some you'd like to forget, like 07 and the cold there, 08 and the cold on that night game. But we've had some big memories there also, thinking like, you know, 2013 was a fun one.
That was in regards to that Bose commercial. The Bose commercial is the one where you see him. He comes out, and the people are booing him and screaming at him, and then he puts the Bose on, and it all goes quiet. He's got some, like, almost symphonic music playing in the background. That's part of that atmosphere down there in Chicago. And they said, hey, they agreed to do it down there, so oh well. How do the Bears of 2018, that defense, compare to the Lovie Smith era when they had Brian Urlacher and Charles Peanut Tillman and such?
Yeah, completely different scheme. At that time than what they're running now. That was two shell based, predicated on four-man rush, getting the quarterback, and everybody a vision of the football, rallying out, making tackles. You had a number of talent guys, you know, a lot of guys really off the line of scrimmage who were the huge difference makers. This defense, obviously, you got a couple great pass rushers and two really good interior guys, you know, and that's kind of like what Tony had, Tony Dungy down in Tampa for a long time. You know, they had such a great front four, could kind of do whatever they want on the back end. These guys got a great front four. Then you got, you know, one of the hardest hitting linebackers in the league. You got a great young rookie, and you got a back end that's played really well. You know, some emerging, really good players like Eddie Jackson, and some veterans who've been playing well for a long time, like Kyle and Prince.
Let's go ahead and take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk a little bit more about this upcoming with the Chicago Bears. Some of you have some strong opinions about this. Also, I want to also talk some Brewers baseball today because the Brewers are real quiet right now. There's a lot of rumors, innuendos down there at the winter meetings. In where are they at? They're in Vegas? They're in Vegas, yeah. By the way, Vegas just got the 2020 NFL draft. Vegas is becoming more and more and more of a player when it comes to putting on big events regarding major sports. So they just got some nice news again as well. We'll talk more about that when we come back. More of the Bill Michael Show next.
16 stations strong. The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back. Reminder that coming up tonight, we are going to be on the road. We're going to be at Rivals. We're going to be in Kenosha. Yours truly, Mike Clements from NFL Sirius Radio, going to be there. Joe Zinzola is going to be there. Bud Light Street Team is going to be there. 6 to 8 tonight. You can hear it on many of these same stations. The Bill Michaels Huddle back out on the road again tonight. And we hope you're facing the crowd if you're down in the Kenosha area. We don't get down this way very often. So come on by and say hi. A sense that the Reds would be aggressive in the winter meetings. But they swung a trade with the Nationals on Wednesday for the right-hander Tanner Roark. So the defending division champion Brewers, the Cubs, the Cardinals, and the Reds all kind of, quote, going for it. And the Pirates, despite trading away the 2018 opening day starter Ivan Nova a day earlier, coming off a season in which they made a major midseason trade for Chris Archer, it looks like everybody's just kind of gearing up, so to speak. The Brewers trying to remain on top and still somewhat quiet. The Brewers returning their core team, who won 96 games during the regular season and fell one shy of the World Series. So while the team like the Reds and the Cardinals, who traded for the D-backs star Paul Goldschmidt last week, they've added pieces, and they plan to add more. The Brewers are going to kind of wait to find the value at second base and potentially a catcher, and then add to the pitching staff. Craig Counsell departed the winter meetings yesterday, and Stearns contemplating an earlier flight home on Thursday. It appeared that the Brewers will not make a significant move in Las Vegas. Are you, I guess, disappointed in that? There were some good talks. But are you disappointed in that? Jed Hoyer of the Cubs saying it's going to be a great division, no question. Last year, the two best records in the National League were in our division. I think that the Cardinals obviously made some big moves already with getting Goldschmidt. The Pirates have made some big moves. They did it last year at the deadline, and they're a lot of fun to play watching their pitching staff down the stretch. And then the Reds, they're going to be more aggressive as well. There's no question. They've been building and accumulating talent for a number of years now. The problem is the Reds haven't been able to kind of get that talent to come to fruition. I mean, their big acquisition years and years ago is when they brought up Homer Bailey. And he's got a couple of perfect games, but he hasn't done anything else beyond, or no hitters. He hasn't done anything else beyond that. He's been mediocre at best. They just haven't been able to get that talent to. I mean, remember when they brought in their center fielder? Who's their center fielder with all the speed?
Billy Hamilton.
Billy Hamilton.
Who's no longer with him.
He's no longer with him. Right. He was the big deal. He was going to add all the speed, get on, be this run-scoring machine. He was a train wreck. He couldn't get on base. He could cover the outfield like a blanket, but he couldn't get on base. So a lot of the guys that they were relying upon just haven't really panned out.
I'd like to know what they're trying to accomplish, though, because
they're just trying to appease the fan base.
I don't get it, though. They talked about how Scooter Gennett was part of their future. And now all of a sudden there's reports out that they want to move Scooter Gennett. And then you see them in the Corey Kluber conversation. What is this organization doing? Do you guys want to go for it, or do you want to rebuild, or what do you want to do?
They don't know. Well, they still have the contract of Joey Votto sitting there. You know, I have no idea.
I don't get it.
Were going to go into full-blown rebuild, they should have gotten rid of Scooter Gennett, traded away Joey Votto, blown out a lot of that talent, and kind of started over.
That's what I would have done.
All you're doing is rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic. They don't have really good pitching to begin with. They're a mediocre team. They can hit the hell out of the baseball, but they're a mediocre to bad team because they just don't have the pitching to sustain. And you're putting bad pitching in a bandbox like Great American Ballpark.
I just don't see how they can look at the situation and say, yeah, we can compete with the Brewers, Cardinals, and Cubs. It's just like, no, it's not your time right now.
Yeah. It's
I don't get it.
I don't see them doing anything. They act like they're going to get better, and they give optimism, so they sell tickets. But beyond that, I don't see them doing much. I just don't. A lot of rumors floating around out there, but really nothing happening. I guess my question to you is, again, you know, are you a little disappointed that the Brewers didn't make a big deal, that they didn't come away with something? And again, sometimes the winter meetings are used more for just kind of setting up a deal than actually making a deal. But they had a really good meeting with Wilson Ramos, who would be a significant upgrade behind the plate. So that line was set. But beyond, I mean, remember, Ramos, a .306 batting average, 15 homers, and 382 at-bats last year. And the Brewers' catchers combined, by the way, hit a whopping .237. So, not great. The Mets have also met with Ramos, by the way, whose other suitors include the A's and the Twins, but Ramos's camp is said to have sensed a serious interest from the Brewers. Now, the Brewers are also, by the way things look, set to break their record when it comes to salaries, because they've got Ryan Braun, Lorenzo Cain, Christian Yelich next season. Rising salaries for a large group of arbitration-eligible players. First time eligible is going to be Travis Shaw. So they're going to have some payroll that they're going to be looking at going, yeah, okay, it's going to go up and up and up and up. How much? Again, though, as much as I want to say, okay, I get it, it's a small market, smallest media market, all the sports, and on, I keep going back to the conversations we've had with David Stearns, with Craig Counsell, with Rick Schlesinger. All of these people have said payroll is not going to be the option, is not going to be the deterrent here. So either it is or it isn't. And if you keep telling us that, I mean, you're not in it to lose money. I mean, dramatic amounts of money, but, you know, this is what people were waiting for, and then they were waiting for the team to say, okay, we believe we're on the cusp, so we're going to go for it. So I think they're a good team, and they want to sustain for a long period of time, but if you're a player away or two players away, don't, after telling everybody be patient, don't you think you owe it to the fans to say, we're going to go ahead and go for it?
But my question is, what exactly, what kind of player are we talking about, and where does a significant upgrade need to be had right now with what you have on paper?
Well,
that's the first question.
First and foremost, you can go behind the plate. I mean, Ramos would be a deal that you would like to get,
which won't cost you a ton.
It won't cost you a ton of money.
And
it may be something that could be down the pipe during the trade deadline. If you think that you're one player away or a pitcher away or whatever, I don't know.
And that's how I look at it.
Yeah,
like I'm fine. You know, the Brewers will make a cut. They'll shore up second base with some kind of stopgap player. They'll maybe try and upgrade catcher. They'll probably bring in a couple of relievers. But I don't see them making any kind of big move this offseason because I don't think they have to.
I don't think that there's a big move out there other than, you know, obviously the obvious, but they're not going to go in that direction.
They're not signing Bryce Harper.
No, they're not signing Manny Machado.
That's not happening.
That's not happening. So I don't think there's a big move out there that's going to put this team over the top.
I just think what they have right now is fine. I'm good with it. And then as the season goes along, if there are significant needs, then that's when the trades happen. That's where I'm willing to make moves is during the season once you get an idea of what this team is, if this is the same team that we saw last year.
The problem is that when you make moves during the season and you're in need, it ends up costing you more than it would have in the offseason.
Well, and then you end up giving up easily more. True. That depends on...
If a team knows you're up against the wall and you're going for it, you end up giving up an extra piece that you probably wouldn't have in the long run.
Nowadays, Bill, it's all about control and how many years of control a player has.
It becomes a seller's market.
That dictates the value. If it's a rental player, you know, especially a guy who's not... You know, I'm not talking like a Madison Bumgarner, because that's a guy that's going to be possibly on the trade market next year, and he will be a rental player. But if you need an extra arm, that's not going to cost you a ton. You know? I mean, if they've got an extra year of control, or they're under contract for another year or two.
No, if you can get the control, that's the only deal way they're going to make a deal. But usually, when your backs are against the wall, you end up giving up just a little bit more than what you would have had you made a deal in the offseason that kind of benefits everybody, or you could bring an extra team in or what have you.
All I know is I'm not going to be crying here come the start of spring training that the Brewers are going to make a big move, because I don't think they have to.
I think the only move that I think people would be surprised at is if they don't make a significant move of some type and I agree with you, I think they're going to go more for bullpen than they are for starting pitching. You just listen to all the national people say, well, they're going to get a starting pitcher. I just don't know who. You know what I mean? I don't know who they're going to go out. They're not going to go out and spend big money and sign a starting pitcher. So the only way they get one would be as if they end up making some type of a deal. And to me, that would end up most likely coming during the season. I just don't see that happening right now unless they feel that there is a significant factor in which they can't, you know, like some of the guys they have, just they don't really have a ton of trust in. 855-830-8648. Going to talk some NFL betting when we come back. Chris Raybon, senior NFL analyst for the Action Network and co-host of I'll Take That Bet on ESPN. He's going to join us coming up next on The Bill Michaels Show.
Everywhere in Wisconsin, The Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Welcome back. Hey, Monday, the Lodge Kohler kickoff back at it. We're going to be at Lodge Kohler at Tavern in the Sky coming up Monday night yet again, 6 to 7 on many of these same stations. And if you're in Green Bay, the Snow Hill, by the way, at the Titletown District, because Lodge Kohler's right next to it. If you're going to be, say, enjoying the winter festivities, come on by and say hi. 6 to 7 this Monday night. It's a Lodge Kohler kickoff in Green Bay at Tavern in the Sky. We hope to see you there. Yeah, the Snow Hill in the Titletown District has snow on it, and it's up and running. It looks really fun. I haven't done it yet. I'd like to do it, but it looks really fun. There was a lot of people having a blast after the Green and Gold postgame show this past Sunday. We were over there for a little while. I got some video of it. Maybe I'll post some video, actually. But it looked like it was a blast. A lot of people having a fantastic time, and they have the ice skating rink up. So if you're going to enjoy the winter festivities, come on over to Lodge Kohler. We hope to see you there as a face in the crowd. Joining us now, Chris Raybon, the senior NFL analyst for the Action Network and co-host of I'll Take That Bet on ESPN, now joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Chris, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Getting ready for some Saturday football this week.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. You got a good one tonight, and I've been looking forward to this because people have forgotten – oh, by the way, that the Chargers are a good football team. And nobody's talking about the season Phillip Rivers is putting together. Meanwhile, Kansas City is getting a lot of the publicity in the AFC, giving up 3.5 tonight. But tonight you kick it off with Chargers in Kansas City. Talk to me about this game.
Yeah, this is one where, you know, a classic Thursday night game, you know, those tend to be trouble for the visiting team. It, you know, they've covered at a – the home team has covered at a 70% clip on Thursday night football over the last 3 years. So from that angle, you know, the Chargers are facing a bit of an uphill battle. It's like Melvin Gordon's going to be out for them. Spencer Ware is going to be out for the Chiefs. You're seeing 55% of the public betting on the Chiefs at 3.5 and the same amount of money, 56%. So nothing really different in terms of the betting market there. But, you know, just in terms of the history with these games on Thursday night, it tends to favor the home favorite.
Then you talked about the Saturday games, and When you looked at the schedule originally, you thought, okay, yawners, no big deal. But Houston's in the thick of things. They're on the road taking on the Jets. Let's start there because if I'm not mistaken, Houston's giving 6.5 on the road for the Jets, which happens to be the Packers' next opponent.
Yep, and it's actually moved up to 7 at some books. You're seeing Houston getting the majority of the public support, 76% of the bet. They're getting a little less than that in terms of the money, 71%, but still the overwhelming majority. I think this is a game where if you want to bet it, you're looking a little more at the over-under in this game. It opened at 42.5. It's been bet down to 41.5. I think there's still value until you get to 41, which is a very common score. So right now you're seeing the public, 59% of the bets coming in on the over, and that's, we always talk about this. The public loves to bet these overs, but 82% of the money is coming in on the under in this game. So that's a huge discrepancy, double the amount of money coming in on the under.
One of the interesting games that, again, I didn't think it'd be that interesting, but it's the 5-7-1 Cleveland Browns on the road, getting 2.5. So basically, Cleveland in a neutral site kind of favored in this one, even though their road record's only 1-5. But Denver given 2.5 in this game, and I'm kind of become a semi-Browns fan as they're actually showing some signs of life.
Yeah, I mean, you got to love what's happened to this team. You know, they kind of get their coaching staff back on, you know, where it needed to be, or at least for the time being. And you're seeing a lot of guys there start to flourish and win some games that hadn't really been able to do that in a while. In this game, I think the spread is not just about Cleveland, but it's about Denver. And, you know, I kind of expressed some concern about Denver last week going into San Francisco, and they really did come out flat. I think it's always tough when you lose one of your best players on defense, you know, Chris Harris, the cornerback, and also one of your best players on offense in Emmanuel Sanders. And so this is going to be a tough game for Denver now. They will have longer to game plan and prepare for this than they did last week when their guys kind of, especially Sanders, went down, you know, in the middle of the week. But it's still going to be a tough game, and you're seeing the money kind of reflect that because the bets are split 50-50, but 75%. Of the money is on Cleveland as that 2.5-point underdog.
One of the games we're going to be paying attention to, a team that's directly ahead of the Green Bay Packers, Minnesota. They are at home. Miami is on the road. Minnesota started out, I believe it was 9.5. It was then it was 7 in some books. I'm seeing this thing all over the road. But Minnesota at home against Miami, talk about that one.
Yeah, this one, I think the interesting thing here is, you know, Minnesota just fired their offensive coordinator, John DeFilippo, and the narrative seems to be that they should be running the football more. I think that will actually get them in trouble because the bottom line is DeFilippo didn't run because the team wasn't good at running the ball. They were one of the worst teams in terms of gaining yardage on early down runs, on first and second down runs, 26th in the league, 31st in the league in first down rate on early down runs. But they're middle of the pack, you know, 14th in net yards per pass on first and second down, 13th in first down rate. So I think in this game, you're just really going to have to see if they fall into the trap of trying to establish the run when Miami has been one of the worst teams, 31st in the league in net yards per pass allowed on first and second down. So you really have to continue to be aggressive against this team. And I think if Minnesota does that, they'll be able to win. But, you know, as far as covering the big spread, I mean, right now it's at 7. You're seeing 58% of the public bets on Minnesota, but the money's split about 50-50. So some sharp money coming in on the Dolphins here, and I think that's because you kind of worry that Minnesota's going to fall into this plan of establishing the run, and the game is not going to they're not going to break it open as much as they should.
You got New England on the road taking on Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh somewhat in a little bit of a free fall right now. A lot of talk about Mike Tomlin. Should he be on the hot seat? New England, though, given 2.5 on the road, how much goes by the gut instinct of, hey, Pittsburgh might just be due, and New England's coming off of just an ugly loss. Now, am I just looking at New England being pissed off going into Heinz Field, and they usually destroy teams after the fact, or should I look at Pittsburgh go, okay, they're due to get a win here?
You know, I think it's a little bit of everything here. You know, you got New England kind of had a letdown last week. You got Pittsburgh back at home where we know they play a lot better. I mean, every time Pittsburgh goes on the road, I think we talked about this last week, it's, you know, you never feel comfortable backing them on the road because they're always, you know, they struggle and come out flat. So, you know, they're back at home. You know, the spread opened up, still favoring New England, and it's actually been bet in New England's favor. So, you know, whoever's laying these bets down, and I think it's a lot of public money still. I don't necessarily think there's a lot of sharp action on this game yet. because you know this is a game the public loves to bet two teams. But 79% of the bets, 90% of the money on New England in the spot has been bet up from a point to 2.5.
Real quick, I want to get to the Packers and the Bears. The Packers get a win. They actually played a full four quarters of football, although Atlanta not a good football team and gave them many opportunities. Now you got the Bears defense. Trubisky, it's revealed on the Sunday night game that his shoulder was actually a minor separation. I don't know how that's going to affect him the remainder of the season. They've got a cornerback out. How do you see this thing playing out?
I think you're going to get another one of these games that's, you know, maybe for the average fan, a little bit underwhelming. A lot of, more defense being played in this one. You know, the as far as the bet, 40% of the public on the Packers, 60% on the Bears. So the line has been bet up from 5 to 6 in favor of Chicago. However, the money split 50-50, so you are seeing some big bets coming in on the Packers here for being, you know, underdogs by more than a field goal. And then the real sharper play is probably the over-under. Again, I think you're going to see another game kind of like this this Rams-Bears game. And, you know, it's, the public is kind of on that side, 65% on the under, but 96% of the money on the under. So some really big bets coming in here on the under. And I think you could see another one of those ugly games.
Chris, always a pleasure. We look forward to your stuff each and every week. The analyst for the Action Network and co-host of I'll Take That Bet on ESPN. Thanks for joining us, pal. Appreciate it, okay?
Always a pleasure, Bill. Take care.
All right, buddy. Talk to you soon. There you go. Chris Raybon joining us on the Schneider Orange Hotline. Schneider hiring drivers right now. You work hard. They treat you fair. 80-plus years. They've been getting it done. Call them 844-PRIDE to go to schneiderjobs.com. Unfortunately, their season came to an end last week. We'll talk more about that coming up next in the Bill Michaels Show.
Wisconsin-wide, the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.
Show on the air. We are glad to have you. Hey, don't forget our friends over at Neumel Medical Center. I want to remind you they have a couple of locations, Milwaukee and Green Bay, treating ED, low T, and also the all-in-one weight loss program. Call them 414-455-4451. Unfortunately, the season came to an end. Mary Harden Baylor out of Belton, Texas, ends up bringing to an end the season for UW Whitewater Warhawks. Talking to us now, their head coach, Kevin Bullis. Coach, how you doing?
Hey, doing all right. I'll tell you, Bill, when you turn the ball over four times and we miss three opportunities at interceptions, that's the story of that game.
That yeah, I was reading the recap of that, and that's not something you guys did very much this season at all. It was very uncharacteristic of the team.
Yeah, I mean, it was a -3 turnover ratio, which to me is astronomical, because our worst game to this season was a -1. And so, I mean, yeah, you go into a semifinal game like that against that type of team, yeah, you're going to be on the short end of that deal.
So give me your thoughts as you come out of this season. You guys obviously had a tremendous year. Your point differential was just out of this world. You guys put everything back on track offensively. So, I mean, I know it's bitter, but give me your thoughts as you come out of this season.
You know, it was exciting because when you recap our season, really our defense jumped out right off the bat, was very dominant all season. And it really our offense just continued to grow each week. And that was, to me, the thing. They were both kind of in different phases of development. I think ultimately what it came down to, and this may sound very soft, and it was really our learning culture. Our kids were so, and when that's pure hard work when it really comes down to it. Our learning culture was really, to me, that thing that separated us from my previous 3 years as a head coach.
Yeah, I was going to say, you guys, it seemed like you made the change in the offseason for the offensive coordinator position. It seemed like everybody kind of grew up a little bit, and it just seemed like things just started to really come together, and you kind of felt it. And just in talking over the season, I know that you had talked about, you know, the fundamentals and the practices, but it seemed like we talked more about the character of the team than we did about the ability of the team.
Yeah, really, and it really was. I mean, even last spring, I felt so optimistic after we completed our first 15 practices. I mean, the leadership of Harry Hensler, our captains, you know, Harry, Nate Truen and Bryce Leshinsky, they were the tip of the iceberg. They really were, because underneath them was an amazing group of that 2018 senior class. set the character, just like you said. They set the character. They set the tempo. They were willing to challenge each other, to push each other day in and day out. And I end up with great progress, and we did. It was great progress for the program. The great thing is, though, Bill, guys are not satisfied. They're hungry.
So give me your thoughts going into next season.
You know, next season, I mean, looking at it, I mean, we got some guys to replace on defense. We got really, to me, seven starters. But again, we played almost 20 guys every game. So, I mean, I feel very good about how we're going to fill those voids. Offensively, wow, we're going to we return a lot of our guys. We lose Cole at QB, and we lose Mitch Detz at wide receiver, and Nate Truen at center. But I'll tell you, we really return the core of that group.
Coach, it's been great, a great season talking to you as always, but an even better season for turning things around from last year. And you guys did it the right way. We appreciate you joining us all season long. Look forward to big things again next year. But congratulations on a hell of a season. And I think our hearts went out to you, man, in taking that loss, because we thought for sure you guys would be facing Mount Union this weekend.
I'm still licking my wound.
Yeah.
Bill, it's always a pleasure talking with you, and really look forward to it each week.
All right, pal. We'll talk to you next year, okay?
You bet.
Thanks, Coach. There you go. Coach Kevin Bullis joining us for a couple of minutes. Their season comes to an end, and yeah, I wish they were playing in the Amos Alonzo Stag Bowl this weekend. It's not meant to be. They just, like he said, turned the ball over and just didn't work out. Coming up in the next hour, we got some buy or sell. Stay tuned for that next to the Bill Michaels Show.
Listening to the Bill Michaels Sports Talk Network.